I'm happy now to welcome to the program Jamila Barghesh. She is the Vera Campbell Research Fellow at the School for Advanced Research here in Santa Fe. She is co-founder and director of the organization Dar Sikhmad in Morocco. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte, for this opportunity.
So let's talk about one of the projects that you are working on, and it's a project called Fog Harvesting. Fog as in water vapor. What's it all about?
Well, fog is being harvested in the region where it is, where there is fog.
In Morocco.
Not only in Morocco, but in other places, in Chile, and also in Southern California, in Oman, in Eritrea, in certain regions of the world where there is a lot of fog. You need a certain kind of weather conditions to have a lot of fog. And once you have a lot of fog, you can harvest it. And it's a practice that has been done in the Canary Islands for a very, very long time, for centuries. We know that the poles or the trees where there is a lot of growth, lichane growth, and under that you can put a certain containers and then you can harvest the fog. And so the indigenous population in the Canary Islands, who are believed to be half Berber, they're called the Gauchos, used to harvest fog. And now, today, with the new technologies, we can actually harvest fog much more efficiently. And there is a few fog specialists in the world. Among them, there is a gentleman called Dr. Schemenauer, who runs an organization in Ottawa in Canada called Fog Quest. And it is a non-profit, and they actually help set up programs. And he has a board of directors, and one of them is Dr. Cesareda, who is based in Chile, where they have put one of the first experiments for fog harvesting. And then there is Dr. Vicky Marsol, who is based in the Gran Canary Island in Tenerife. And she is also one of the leading world specialists about fog harvesting. And she is our partner in Dar Sikhmad. And so we've set up a experimental net. And I invite you to go to our site and see them, or to the Fog Quest site and see them. And then you just harvest the water that is inside the fog.
Now, this is what seems so, for those of us who are not familiar with this practice, one would think that in regions where there's a lot of fog, there would be a lot of rain, and that you don't need the extra water that you would get from harvesting the fog.
Well, it seems a little bit paradoxical, but when you have a lot of fog, you don't have a lot of rain, because the actual rain never becomes rain because it becomes fog. It doesn't get enough momentum to become clouds, to rise up high in the sky to become clouds that would give eventually rain. And for instance, in the region where we are, which is the southern part of Morocco, right next across from, it's about 300 kilometers across from the Canary Islands, there is a cold current, the anticyclone, the Azores and cold currents, and the Aitan cyclones, which doesn't allow the water to raise high enough, to evaporate high enough to become rain. So it becomes clouds. And so that clouds of fog. And that is a fog that's very misty, that's very kind of heavy with the water. And the region where we have our experiment in the southern part is on top of the mountain. Why? Because the air pushes the fog, and then it gathers momentum as it goes through the channels of the mountains until it hits the mountain, and then we can harvest it through the technique. Now, where you have a lot of dissipated fog that's not thick, you can put your nets up, but they won't give you a high yield of water. Let me explain a little bit the apparatus, because that it is so simple, so efficient, and yet so extraordinary in a way. So it's simply two poles on which we would put a mesh of polyolefin. It's a material that is connected to a little conduit at the end that itself connected to a pipe and that pours water inside a container. It's that simple. And so you need a little wind. You need wind because the wind pushes the fog as it moves through the nets, and the water condenses and drips really little by little. You need a lot of patience to be able to gather the water. But once you have a huge amount of netting, then the more nets you have, the more water you have. So for the experiments that were done, there are a lot of places where this has been done. It has been done in Lima, in Chile. It has been done in Oman. It has been done in Nepal. And usually you need to have a long period of observation before you can launch a project, because you need to make sure that you cover all of the seasons and know what is the yield of your nets. So you only put experimental nets, and the experimental nets are 1 square meter.
So in 1 square meter, how much water can you get in a period of, what, a day or a week?
All right. Well, we have averages, yearly averages, because you have months where you have no fog in the region where we work, right? For instance, in Morocco, in Ifni, we don't have fog from June till, I think, December. But then that same period, you have a lot of fog in the Canary Islands. So it's a kind of inversion of the climate. We did 4.5 years of observation of measuring every day, and we also have a wireless meteorological station that measures humidity levels and wind velocity and temperature, etc. So in a 4-year period, we've been able to get 10.5 liters per 1 square meter. That's about 2.3 gallons, I believe, in American measuring. And that is the second best result in the world, following that of Oman.
Over what time period?
In a year. This is the average for a year.
Okay.
There are days where we had actually over 20 liters per square meter. And then there are days in June or in August where we have, in August also, where we have zero. The idea is to build enough nets to have enough water that would fulfill the needs of the local population, and I would like to talk about that, and to store it so that they can have water during the dry season when there is no fog and there is very little water.
Now, is this fog harvested water suitable primarily for drinking water, household use? What do people use it for?
Well, you can use it for a variety of purposes, but we will, in the region where we work, we will have it for drinking water, but we will add chlorine and salts because it doesn't come from the earth, so it doesn't have salts in it.
Right.
And the region is it's not polluted in the high mountains, so the water is pretty much clean. And right now, as I said, we were just doing the experimental period. Now we're going to go to the implementation of the larger phase, and we will have test lab work done on the water pretty much every week to make sure that it is potable. But, I mean, we drink the water when we go to the mountain to check on our nets, and it's really very tasty. But, again, it lacks the chlorine and the necessary minerals. For human consumption. In other places, for instance, in Peru, in Lima, in some, there is just an article that was written not long ago, was published in Science magazine, and it was about the use of the water for reforestation. You can also use it for livestock, which is the case that we're hoping actually to do in Ifni in Morocco, to use it for livestock as well. So a variety of purposes.
So tell us about the area and about how this can benefit the people in that part of Morocco.
Well, I could actually go on for a long time on that, but I think I will try to focus on really two main reasons for the board of Dar Sihmed to do this project. First of all, historically, this has been a very kind of poor and marginal region for historical and political reasons that are made explicit in our site, in the internet site. So the villages have been pretty much depopulated, and there is an extremely, really serious scarcity of water. And the board has decided that we really want to work on the United Nations Millennium Goals and the current life decade for water, and that there is a necessity for poorer population to have they have the right to have access to drinking water. In the work and the surveys we did in the region where we are from, we come from, also from the region, and we've worked in the region for over 10 years, the women spend a yearly average. In the summer, they spend a little bit more, and they spend a yearly average of 3.5 hours a day to go get water. Now, imagine all the lost opportunity of having your 3 hour and a half of your day, you're just going to come and get the water. And in the summer, the situation is even worse, because the region, the soil of the region is not porous, so there's not a lot of water that infiltrates. The groundwater is very low. There's not a lot of groundwater in the region. And so the few wells usually dry in the summer. And so the women have to walk very early, starting at 4 a.m., and go to the wells and wait and take turns to have the water, the level of the water raised. So it's a really extremely difficult situation of not having water, and then sometimes needing to buy the water when there is a serious shortage, and the water that's delivered in tanks is not precisely of the best quality.
What is your vision for what fog harvesting can do for these women, for these places where there's so little water and where that's the way they spend their time right now?
Well, we have a dream, to quote somebody very well known here in the U.S., that actually having accessibility to water, to clean, free water, easier, would make not only transform the lives of the women and eventually empower them in taking this time and doing some economic activities, as they themselves have actually articulated in the surveys and the work we've done with the women, but it would also reverse and stop the migration, the out-migration movement, and that it will continue sustaining a dignified livelihood for the population, and that it would enable them to kind of own this project to be their own. We as an association, as an NGO, as a non-governmental organization, we are here to enable, to put an apparatus, a technical apparatus that will make the life of the individuals much easier, and they are ready for that, and they want that, and they are absolutely 100% committed to the project. I was just back in Morocco during the holidays, and they have given us an important piece of land on which to build the pool where we will be storing actually the water. So it is transformative at the individual level of the women, certainly. Imagine you have 3.5 hours back in your day, you recoup that time. It is transformative at the level of the entire village lives. Most of the men are migrant men working in bigger cities. There is the possibility for them to come back. And also, this region has a lot of livestock, a lot of goats and sheep, but there is also a lot of bees and honey making. And some of the farmers, who are the men traditionally, have to take their bees really far away for water. Now, this would make it possible to keep actually the structures of the villages in place and really transform the environment in a way that you don't need really to dig up for whales, which is not very actually beautiful to do, and it can be dangerous. And it creates a sustainable environment where you are getting whatever rain you would have gotten if there weren't fog.
There is a natural limit also to the amount of water that you can harvest this way, and therefore a natural limit to the amount of growth that can come from this.
Yes, there is, but the volumes also of the fog are incredible. We have actually pictures in the sites that show you how the fog rolls in. It's like cascades of water. It's actually quite a mystical experience being in fog. And
yeah.
I showed some of the pictures during my presentation at the SAR, and people were just absolutely amazed. But that is an excellent question. And actually, one of the things that we're doing right now, what we're proposing is to set up the project for only four villages, actually three villages and one traditional school. And that would be a model program. And it is only after the success of this project that we know that the technical apparatus functions perfectly well, that the human aspect is also working well, because, you know, normally in these situations there's always kind of conflicts between the people and the stakeholders. It's normal. It's a human thing. So only then will we expand the entire project of fog harvesting to all of the communities around the mountain where we will be harvesting, most of the villages, three rural communes that we're interested in and who suffer acutely from water shortage, that we will be servicing them. And that's about almost 1,700 people. But for this model project, we are only looking at about 400 people.
In that area, what do people eat? What's the land like?
There is a very little agriculture, again, because there's not a lot of water, and so they would usually wait for the rain, and sometimes the rain comes, but it's often followed by dry winds from the Sahara, because it's the southern frontier is the Sahara, so you have very dry winds. So the people eat a lot of the staples that they grow, like the wheat, and there is fruits and vegetables that are delivered to the local markets that they can buy. But the level of income of the communities is extremely, extremely low.
Jamila, your nonprofit, of which you are the co-founder and director, is called Dar Sihman. It's in Morocco. What does it do, and what are you doing here to let people know more about it?
Well, it has been really fun being in Santa Fe. I really, really am very thankful to the School for Advanced Research. I have been selected, and this project of fog harvesting has been selected in the first Vera Campbell Fellowship for practicing women from the third world. So I had the privilege of coming here and trying to work on funding or getting some funds for the project. One, but also a kind of advertising for the field school that we run through Dar Sihman. When we started Dar Sihman, the board decided, and we've all kind of decided, all the people who are on the board, that we needed to be financially independent, and that we wanted to take the opportunity of having such a unique environment in Ifni, which was a Spanish colony and which has really a unique characteristics and a mix-up from the Sahara, from the Berber world, and from the Moroccan Arabic-speaking world, to make it an experiment for students with their professors who would come and study and do a study abroad program. And actually, our first year was the summer of 2010, so last year. And the idea was that whatever yield we get, whatever money and funds we get from these students would be reinvested back into the development projects and the cultural infrastructure and heritage projects. Unfortunately, we realized after we've been working on the harvesting, the water harvesting project, that would never be enough. So what I'm doing here in the U.S. right now is trying to raise some money, if not totally, at least parts of the money to make this project become alive, but also give the opportunity for service learners through the universities that would come, and of course they have to pay some minimal fee and contribute also to the building maybe of the fog, and or just simply witness this experience and meet with the people.
And then tell other people about it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Jamila Barghesh is the Vera Campbell Research Fellow at the School for Advanced Research. Her organization is called Dar Sikhmed. It's in Morocco, and the website is darsihmad.ma, so people can go there and check it out. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.